Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, brother, why we climbing this mountain?
Because our ancestor Ake Khufu traveled thousands of miles as our ancestors took civilization from here all the way to what we call Kemet today, where the Arabs have invaded and ruled. And our ancestor Khufu and Narmer, who opened the first dynastic period, said there must be a 26th dynastic period. Only way to get there is for Africans from around the world who care about our people, who hate our enemies, are willing to kill and destroy.
To get there, they
gotta climb this mountain and go back to their ancestors. Listen, so we gotta go.
Be with you, brother.
Sitting at the foothills of the mountains of the moon, staring at the horizon, the war is coming soon. Sitting thinking and contemplating about black power moves. Still gotta take the time to watch the flowers bloom while you saving up dough. Trying to buy a car, I'm investing in gold bars. I'm trying to buy a farm. The elder barber told me you can never be a man if you can't grow your own food, so buy your own land. I'm building my own home with my own hands, buying an arsenal to supply the whole fam. I'm going back to the motherland, reconnect with the brothers and bring the block out of the stretch of cracking like rubber bands. I'm in Uganda in the city of Kampala, talking black economics and how to make $1 million. Made it to the top of the mountain to sort of landscape. Be shaking with my words because I'm firm just like a handshake. Crackers want to try to stop the movement like a handbrake. It's the ancestral spirits that gave this man strength. African insurrection music united front of the vanguard of the movement. Yeah, my ancestral spirits are talking to me.
Sitting
at the top of the mountain, beating the djembe. Think about the brothers on the block like the Kenbe. Training, deep meditation like a sensei. Rocking dashikis made out of kente. Feeling proud, looking down at the clouds. Always standing on my square, never dropping my crown. Building with the elders, one foot in the now. It's my duty to protect the black woman and child. Yeah, ready to brawl like I'm a Carl Cabral. My body is my temple, epitage my hall. See, my mind is the monument, words are the documents. Containing the wisdom to teach the populace about the white devils, the European apocalypse. Grabbing machetes for me to chop them with. Got the black 9 year and I'm cocking it. Loaded with hollow tips, ready for me to pop them with.
It's time for your leaders. Do all that they can do. They take as far as they can take.
In
the last battle, the warrior class. It takes over for God. It takes over for the people. It takes over for the ancestors. There's only one person left in the end. And that's the warriors. Go on.
Yeah.
They take you to the finish line.
Made it to the top of the mountain and got initiated into a brotherhood of stone cold liberators. Took an oath. No way to be infiltrated and choose my weapon, the black gold or nickel plated. I break this oath, may I die a horrible death. My ancestors made it guide my steps, and I'ma fight like I'm the last one left. My heart too big, it may collapse my chest. With the spirit of desoline, I'm clean. No weed and nicotine, no cocaine crack, no dope with promethazine. This cracker is a demon, but you acting like a diva. Black woman is a goddess, almighty queen of Sheba. To try to live without her, that'll make you a believer. Like my eyes should keep me balanced with the scale like a Libra. Gotta be a good example, brother, see me as a leader. But don't try to twist the meaning if you see me in the beamer, cause you know I got the heater. Putting that work in, sweating by the leader, cause I'm shaking and I'm fiending just to hear a cracker screaming, begging and pleading for his life. Then I poke him with this knife and leave him leaking. I'm fully dedicated to African liberation and I'm patient cause I know it takes time to build a nation. I'm fully dedicated to African liberation and I'm patient cause I know it takes time to build a nation. My ancestral spirit is talking to me. My ancestral spirit is talking to me. My ancestral spirit is talking to me. My ancestral spirit is talking to me.
If you stand here at the mountains of the moon, you should feel, you know, really blessed. Your entire journey and tour has been a journey of blessing, standing on holy ground. And, you're right inside the pyramid. The original pyramid is this one. You're standing on the pyramid. And there are actually three of them, to tell you the three kings. Now, underneath this pyramid is a lake shaped like the shape of Africa. And what that tells you with this lake shaped like Africa is to say, as you remember the pyramid, as you remember classical African history, as you remember your great achievement, just know that you are doing it in the name of Africa and for the greatest good of African
people. Of African people. Of African.
Peace, 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 and Black Power family. Welcome to another episode of Through Knowledge Radio, the place where knowledge is born. This is your host, Knowledge Born a Lot, and we are extremely honored and privileged to have yet another year of straight Black pride. We are celebrating straight Black pride, straight Black power, straight Black family this weekend in honor and ode of our illustrious Vanguard movement, straight Black pride movement. That phone number to call in, family, is 515-605-9360. Again, 515-605-9360. Press 1 with your questions or your comments. And you have an extreme honor and privilege to have in our midst today, Baba E.J. Jones, a.k.a. Baba Kafari Kamathi, is in the building. So it becomes my honor and privilege to introduce the summer and present to others this afternoon's guest live here on Through Knowledge Radio, none other than the man, the myth, the legend, straight Black pride's own, Baba E.J. Jones is in the building. Black power. How you doing, Baba?
Peace, brother. How you doing today?
I'm good. Straight Black and proud.
Good. Straight Black pride, man. Bibi Fahodie, man. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you this afternoon. I just want to make sure you can hear me okay and everything as I'm set up here. So hopefully there's no interruptions. I'm hooked in. So is my sound okay for you?
Sound is great, Baba.
Good, brother. Appreciate that.
And congratulations to the opening of the newest Straight Black Pride chapter in Boston. Salute
yes,
to the
sir.
Organization. A one
yes,
of
sir,
one
man.
Organization,
putting,
I might add.
Yes, man. They putting in work, man. They putting it in today. A big brother, my favorite firefighter, Brother Osali, he's up there in Boston, Sister Ayo. So they putting it in, man. They're opening up chapters all across the country.
So we always begin with it. Introduction, you could take as little or as long as you like to introduce yourself to our listening audience and to the family that may view these archives.
Well, let me first just say, man, I want to thank you again for allowing me to be here on Do the Knowledge Radio, a place where knowledge is born. And for the listening audience who may not have heard of me, I am Kifaru Kaladosis Kamathi, which is a name that I've been blessed with by our brother Irritated Genie, known in other circles as Ayo Kamathi, formerly E.J. Jones, which a majority of people do know me as E.J. Jones. But again, I just went over a name transition. So I'm proud to be here on the show. And this is my first time doing something publicly with the name change. So, man, this is an honor for me. As far as my background, brother, I'm born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, from the south side of Chicago. And I've had a lot of different experiences in life from obviously in sports, professional sports, a lot of different activities as far as sports altogether. But majority of people who have known me on the south side of Chicago really have known me through an athletic world and then moving on to the highest part of being playing in the NFL. I recently started working with the Straight Black Pride organization about 3 years ago when I had some dialogue with Brother Irritated Genie. And it's the first organization that I can say that I formally joined that organization because of the work and what they were doing and the dream and passion that they could see. So, I mean, I know that we're going to have opportunity to talk a little bit about things that I've done, but really, man, that's kind of in a nutshell of what I've done in the past to a bit. But my current position is that I work with what's called Straight Black Survival. And with the Straight Black Survival going into the 21st century, we're taking all of those brothers and sisters, because that's what we have to do. We have to survive. So we're taking all those teachings and techniques that we have learned from our ancestors, that we are now currently learning from those people who may have spent time in the military or who are hunters, and we're putting all that work together, and even with our street organizations, and on the show that I do on Tuesdays on the Straight Black Survival, we talk about that constantly of how the survival was needed for us in the 21st century.
Okay, so we can get into that point right there. That's one of the points that I wanted to hit on, how important, well, let me just back up. Black survival, you know, it's not like any other survival on the planet. So how important is black survival for black people?
Well, I think what we've, as a people, is the we have to survive. We are survivors. When you look through our history, that's all. That's what we've been doing. We have been surviving. At this point in junction where we're at, it's imperative that people understand that we have a common enemy. That is, their mindset is to destroy us completely off the face of the earth, especially in the Americas, and in what we call this United States of America. We find ourselves of no longer use to the people who consider themselves the founders of this country. And when you don't have any use for a people, what do? You eliminate or you exterminate that group, just as we saw what happened with the native people of this country. So historically, if we look through history, that is what is happening to us. Now, we have to be smart enough now to understand we can't allow this to happen again. And those are the people who are waking up and putting in the work, as you are, brother, and as your organization and many other organizations that's doing the work. It's just time for us now to come together to understand that it's about straight black survival. We have to survive. We have to be the people that's putting that out there. And as Marcus Garvey said, race first. And the lesson that we have to take from this and move forward.
I agree wholeheartedly. So can we talk about the different dimensions or different levels of black survival? Because maybe some of the listening audience that might be listening, or, you know, the brothers and sisters who might have seen the flyer may think of it in one aspect, like, you know,
right,
a bug out bag, you know, prepping.
Yes.
So can
sure,
we approach it, you know, and from a holistic manner in regards to truly what black survival means?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great way to put it. There's so many different levels of it, and what I have to do is find my lane, what my lane was, what I could bring to the movement. So as you mentioned, the hope, I mean, you have diet, you have health, you have so many different events about how to survive, but my lane was one of the physical survival, the ability to, when things go wrong, or it's in the industry of prepping, when stuff hits the fan, are you prepared? Is your family prepared to be able to drop everything that you're doing? And can you move within 2 minutes and be gone from one location to another, or in 20 minutes? How are you going to survive? And what we find out, that the basic instinct of survival, what we have to be prepared for, is the three rule, which is 3 minutes without oxygen, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food. So that's the concept in which we have to start to thinking like that. And that's just the short part, because there's obviously a longer part, being able to stay gone longer than that. But and through the survival thing that we look at is all about awareness. So we use a color code system in our awareness system, which this is something that's been used throughout the military. It's been used throughout anybody who has done any type of self-defense or awareness training, that majority of us live in what is called color condition white, which 99% of us walk around unaware of our surroundings. So when I talk to people about them being a victim of a crime, or even our sisters or any brother who has been a victim of it, they'll say, well, the criminal just caught me by surprise, or, you know, I was attacked. Well, these things just don't appear or happen in thin air. It's that the person was already there who meant to do you harm. You just were not aware of the situation that you were at. So we teach that we need to stay out of condition white and go into condition yellow. And condition yellow is a situation where we are alert about our surroundings. We're not paranoid, but we understand our surroundings, and we're looking in a direction where we're keeping our head on a swivel, so to speak, as we used to say in an NFL in football. But as you move from condition yellow, the next condition is condition orange, where you identify a threat. But the key here is once you identify that threat, it's not to take your eye off the threat. And if that threat crosses what we call your trigger line, then you go into condition red, meaning the fight is on. And anybody who has been in a fight, or if you look at fights that happen, which we are talking about in survival, there's times where you do have to fight, and I can speak on that as well. But the people who win those fights are the ones who are prepared to bring the violence to the fight. It doesn't matter if you're trained as a boxer, if you're trained as a wrestler, whatever that training is, that's great. But if you're not prepared mentally to bring the violence to the fight, 9 times out of 10, you end up being the victim of that fight. So those are just some of the things that we look at when we're training and talking about survival on that aspect of it. But I'll tell anyone that when you're dealing with a physical confrontation or you're dealing with something, there's typically three things that happen. And the first two, you either stand and fight or you can flee. And there's nothing wrong with fleeing in order for you to survive. The thing that happens is, this third thing that happens is a freeze. And this is where we find the majority of the people being injured or being in a situation they can't get out of, because that moment that you freeze and you're undecided on what you're going to do is where you end up in the most dangerous situation. So, hey, if you have to stand in your ground and fight, that's one thing, but there's nothing wrong with having the ability to flee a situation in order to survive.
That's right. I agree wholeheartedly. I spent 17 years in the military, you know.
Yes.
And been to some obscure and austere type of environments when, you know,
right.
They had a saying like, be, you know, be in a hard target. Don't be a soft target, you know.
Mm.
And, you know, we had the chance to interface with some of the Iraqis and some of the Afghanis, and they videotape everything. So when we would go out in our convoys, they would videotape the convoy. So they knew, based off of how we were set up within our convoy, what type of, you know, weaponry that we had, weapon systems and their capabilities, but also who responded to a threat and who didn't. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
So, you know,
yes, sir.
You know, when we speak about fight or flight mode, you know, fighting and flight is all critical. So if you engage the enemy, they have to think twice. You see what I'm saying? So they have to come up with another tactic and be adaptable. But if you just flee, they're like, okay, we're going to get them every time. You know, we're going to get one at least. You see what I'm saying? One vehicle, one casualty, you know, at least each time, because they're not going to engage us. They, you know, because they've been trained to just get out of the kill zone. You see what I'm saying? So, you know,
we might
be in situations where you have to make the best decision possible in the shortest amount of time. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, that battle drill is something that comes into play, you know, it's a quick reaction without applying a deliberate thinking process. So it should just be like second nature. You see, so it's like, you know, if you're in a situation where you're receiving fire, you take cover and you return fire as soon as you acquire your target. You see what I'm saying? So it's like second nature. There's nothing to think about. You know,
yes,
so
sir.
Dealing with that, you spoke about mentally preparing. You see what I'm saying? Can you walk us through a way or some ways that we could mentally prepare for what is to come?
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, like the military, you have that background in the military and that training. Mentally being prepared, because you go through a boot camp, you go through those things. Now, when you look at the correlation between, say, let's take football, for instance, many football plays and football strategy and military strategy are very similar. There was a time before, you're looking at the national football, looking at college, majority of those people who played football were former military people. So those strategies and things, they kind of run together. When you, those who may watch a football game tomorrow, something of that nature, what you're seeing is an offensive attack and a defensive attack. These are plays. These are things that are going on to attack an opponent. And similar to even a military, now take away obviously the guns and the actual live fire, but when you have live bodies running down full space and the collisions that's going on, inside of the NFL, what you do have is similar attacks and fronts that are being made. So in the military and in the NFL, what we look at is what is called the OODA loop, okay? And the OODA loop is something that military has always trained on, as well as the NFL has trained on, okay? And we talk about observe, orient, decide, and act. When you have conflict or confrontation with military or NFL, what we're trying to do is observe what's going on. We're going to orient that, make a decision, and act. If I can change that person's OODA loop, then I have definitely changed his mental capacity and what he needs to do. So I make that correlation to say that as far as what we need to do mentally is that we have to start preparing ourselves that, one, we are in a war and understanding what war is. And when you start to understand that you're in a war for your survival, it will help change your mental attitude on how you go out and perceive the world each and every day. I think Baba Baruti says it best of all, what we're fighting for is sovereignty. We have to have our own sovereignty. And if we have organizations that are not talking about fighting for your sovereignty, your own, then what is that organization actually doing? So we have these goals in mind. And this is why I'm so proud of what Straight Black Pride is doing and other organizations. But Straight Black Pride with Irritated Genie is the forefront of people who are fighting against the homosexual agenda, the attack against our men and our sisters, the attack against pedophiles, the attack against these things that are tearing away the black fabric of our family, black man, the black woman, and the black child. So mentally, these are the things that we have to concentrate on in order to prepare ourselves for survival.
Yes, I agree, you know, wholeheartedly. 90% of it is mental, you know, and that's how we're being attacked through an overwhelming, unrelenting, undying psychological operation, you know, with that mind map, you know, seeing yourself other than yourself. You see what I'm saying? An altered, jaded view of your own body, because when you're dealing with the lack of self-identity and self-awareness and self-actualization, you become actualized in the mind frame of whatever your enemy says you are. You see what I'm saying? So that we have a lot of terms that we have used, you know, that we have been given as inheritance from our ancestors, but a lot of these terms have been co-opted. You see what I'm saying? So for
yes,
me
sir.
To call myself a black nationalist, for me to call myself a Pan-Africanist, these are not terms I can use exclusively anymore. These used to describe a character, a direction, a goal, an aim, an objective. But now, with this Eurosex assault, anybody can be any of those things. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So how I identify myself is straight black proud. You see what I'm saying? That's not a term
yes.
where you can see some Eurosexual running around talking about straight black pride. It's just, you know, it's an oxymoron.
Exactly.
You see,
yes.
you see what I'm saying? So, you know, and it also ensures that when we meet together, we plan, we plot, we strategize, we're discussing the tomorrow. You see what I'm saying? All of these things used to work in tandem. It used to be where you could say, hey, you know, that's a solid brother, sister, Pan-African, you understand what I'm saying, black nationalist.
Right.
All of these terms were synonymous with building a future and sustaining a future long term. But what this Eurosexual assault has done has even eroded the identity. Now, where it was a solid identity, it's an identity theft, and which causes an identity crisis. You see what I'm saying? Just think for a second. You got everything together, Bobby Cafaro, and you about to leave out the house, and then you do that tap. You do that tap. You like,
yeah.
Baby, where are my keys? You understand what I'm saying? You're like, baby, where are my keys? You got everything together.
Right.
Everything you got, but you don't have your keys. You're like, where are my keys? I know I done put my. Now you're in a situation just how quick we attach to the things that, you know, cause us to operate. We can't operate at that point. It doesn't matter what else is going on. You got to find your keys. So you're running around the house. you're going upstairs, downstairs, tearing up everything. And you're in an identity crisis because you don't have what you need in order to go forward. And you're like, Let me just calm down. Let me recollect my thoughts. Where was the last place I was at? Where was the last time I saw my keys? You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And you go through that quick process, and boom, you done lost your keys in your pocket.
Yeah.
You lost your keys in your pocket. You see what I'm saying? But in that moment, nothing else mattered. The only thing mattered at that time is what you did not have. You see what I'm saying? So imagine if somebody said, I know where your keys are. Now you're interdependent upon that person to show you where your keys are. Then they say, well, in order for you to get these keys, you have to do X, Y, and Z. You see what I'm saying?
So I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Now we're not in a survival mode. Now we're not thinking about a tomorrow. We're thinking about being led based on our interdependency upon whom appears to be able to provide what we need. You see what I'm saying? So we're not in a space of self-sufficiency. We're in a state of self-dependency.
Yes.
So now
we have to get out of that dependency. Yes.
Right.
I mean, we saw signs of this even with the Hurricane Irma, which came through the southeast coast, going to Florida and causing all this destruction. And as many shows as that I do on Straight Black Survival, still we have number of thousands and thousands of our brothers and sisters who, without water, without food, without shelter, because of the dependency that somebody else is going to come and provide for them. And that's just not true. We have to get out of the mindset that the first responders are coming to save us. Well, we need to turn that around, and we need to be the first responders of our own people. And taking care of your home, being that first responder, do I have everything necessary in my home in order to protect my family and then to protect my neighbors or those people like-minded like me who are with me? So cut the dependency off and start leaning on each other, brothers and sisters, for your survival. And that's key and essential. I agree with everything that you mentioned in there.
Definitely key. We've been doing Black Survival and General Civilization class here every Wednesday for almost as long as the life of the show. You know, so for the last, 18 months, every Wednesday, talking about the bug out bag, talking about bugging out, talking about bugging in, talking about, and then defending your assigned area and the psychological aspects in regards to, surviving and, all the different type of ways that, you could use to store food and make a fire, boom, all of the things that you would think. You see what I'm saying? And still, it's like day zero for, everybody showing up. Hey, so what was that bag thing you were talking about?
Bug out bag? That's what they're saying.
So it's like, all of those things. And, there's been some amazing strides that have been done. You see what I'm saying? But holistically, we're not prepared holistically,
No.
We're not prepared, Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing. See, and we're not prepared. However, we have to start. And you can start with what we call an EDC, which is everyday carry. What is it on your body that you carry every day? So there's just things that I do not leave my home or anywhere, wherever I'm going, I'm going to have these items on me no matter where I go. And everybody needs to understand they need to have a knife on them, okay? Whether it's a folding knife or a fixed blade knife, you need to have a knife in order to either defend yourself, maybe you have to cut something, but you have to have a knife on your person every day. Those who have the ability to carry firearms, then you need to carry a firearm and train yourself to be able to handle that firearm. And that's one thing that's mentally, if you don't feel that you have the ability to defend your life with a firearm by taking a life, then a firearm is not what you need to have, because the only thing that's going to happen with that firearm is going to get taken from you and used against you. So get the proper training. There's many organizations out here that are doing the type of training that needs to happen with firearms. And we see a surge of sisters, African-American sisters, who now are getting trained or buying firearms. And that's a good thing to see that they're doing that. I would just encourage to make sure you're getting the proper training And what do I call the proper training is meaning how to handle that firearm when it misfires, if you're dealing with a semi-automatic, how to handle that firearm as far as taking it down, getting the cleaning that it needs to happen, and being able to handle the firearm under distress situations. Because even though you go to a firing range to shoot targets, that's one thing, and you should do that. I encourage people to shoot at a stationary target, because that's how you're going to hone in your skills. However, there are other drills that you need to do, because nine times out of 10, your target is not going to be just standing still in one location for you to put shots down range on. So you have to learn how to fire from different positions and also at different distances. So I think that proper training is essential as far as and key to understanding how to work firearms. But start out preparing where, hey, I don't leave my house without my firearm and without my knife or a lighter or something to make fire. You have to have three or four things that are key to you everyday carry things. Then we can graduate to start saying, well, now we need to create a bug out bag or a get home bag. And those are things that there are many organizations like Black Preppers 101 or Black Preppers who are on Facebook. They post things daily on their show or on their page on items that you can buy. And we're not talking about spending a lot of money, brother. What we're talking about is just, hey, going to the dollar store, going somewhere and picking up small and bit items that you can add to your bug out bag, okay? So we got to start thinking that way. For those who are not thinking that way, for those brothers and sisters that are doing that, then you have to grab someone and teach them and show them this is what you're going to need in case when things go bad. It's not in case, it's just a matter of time when they go bad.
Right. And the key is in there being consistent about it, you know. Once you do it, you know, getting in that mode, you know, hey, every week or every 2 weeks, depending on your pay cycle, and say, hey, you know, I'm going to get these items. Let me get these items. Let me get these items. Yeah. And just, you know, disciplining yourself and submitting to that process, you know. Can we speak about self-defense? I know what you just were making reference to in regards to firing that weapon. You know, there's an analogy. Mm-hmm. Like I coached basketball for 17 years now.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You know, from I went in reverse. I started with, you know, adults and then, you know, transitioning to children. And, you know, everybody's
okay.
The same. Everybody's in the same mental capacity and state regardless to age group when it comes to sports.
Right.
So, you know, as a coach, day one, you know, you get, well, day zero, I call it, you know, you get a bunch of different individuals that show up and profess to want to play a team sport, you know. So within that first two practices, if I can't make a team out of the first two practices, there's no victory is not certain. You see what I'm saying? So now we're
sure.
Doing things to build the team out of individuals. You know, you do a skills assessment, you know, identify the needs, boom, 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 real quick, but then we get into team building exercises and high stress. You see what I'm saying? So now you got, you know, brothers or sisters or brothers and sisters running up and down the basketball court, and I say, stop. You shoot. You understand what I'm saying? And you run it back up and down the court. You understand what I'm saying? We're going. So, you know, we put in the pressure. No pressure. You at the free throw line. But if you miss, we run it for the next 15 minutes. Boom. You understand what I'm saying? And you're running. But you're building up a type of acumen and a regimen and aesthetics in regards to being able to shoot positions where you're not likely to shoot. You see what I'm saying? Or, you know, a state and condition within yourself. You know, your heart rate is accelerated. You the basket might be moving back and forth. You got to get all of that together and focus for that second and acquire your target and fire and shoot. You see what I'm saying? So it's the same type of mentality.
Yeah.
You're moving from one location to the next location. You see what I'm saying? Under fire.
Right.
And you get into that next, boom, you're acquiring the target. You can shoot on the move. You can shoot on the walk. You can shoot on the run. You can shoot from a crawling position, a kneeling position. You know, all these type of scenarios for you to be able to engage effectively and put rounds down range, you know.
Yes, sir.
One thing that really always, you know, had me a little crazy. We're looking at an opposition who trains to kill us. You see what I'm saying? The targets are black. You see what I'm saying? The targets are black. So now all the difference between seeing a black man, woman, and child and seeing a target is no difference. All you see is a target. Target acquired, target put down. That's it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because your silhouette, you're looking at that silhouette, and that silhouette, when you see that shadow, when you see that brother or sister, you see that target, you see that silhouette, you see the head pop up, boom. You know from your training, it's second nature. You're firing your weapon. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're not trying to talk to a shadow. You're not trying to reason with the shadow. You see a silhouette, boom, head up, target quiet, bam. Rounds down range, target down. That's it.
Yes, sir.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. And that, that comes from conditioning, from what you're doing in the training. So the conditioning, for me, for example, as I mentioned to the audience, that I grew up in Chicago on the South Side. So the self-defense is one. I don't know, brother, how many people are familiar with – I mean, obviously people are familiar with Chicago, and because of Barack Obama, a lot of that, and because of the violence that's being reported and the number of deaths that are happening. I came up in Chicago at a different time in age, the 60s, late 60s, and then kind of coming forward from there. But self-defense really started that building on how to take care of yourself outside of your home. And some of those who may have a lot of brothers and siblings and stuff, maybe you had to defend yourself inside the house, okay? So things can happen there. But the self-defense from my training started with a street awareness of what was going on in the streets of Chicago. Now, the way Chicago is divided, because even Martin Luther King said in 67 or 68 that when he visited Chicago, it was the most segregated city than any southern city that he had ever been in. And that's the same thing it is in Chicago now. It's very a segregated place. You know, you may go 15 blocks, it's all black, then goes all Hispanic, goes all Irish, and all Chinese and different ethnic groups there. But in the city of Chicago, it is also divided among its blacks, meaning one group on the south side, one group on the west side, and then what we have is what we call organizations, or what other people would call street gangs. And that has been going on since the late 50s and really peaked in the late 60s and then kind of continued going on. But the survival came from how to get through and navigate your way through these different parts of the city and to survive through that. So you learn different techniques of how to survive that way. Now, my personal training, because in 1972, I mean, Bruce Lee was, you know, making all these movies, and this was a thing where every kid who ever saw a Bruce Lee movie was outside, you know, doing karate and stuff.
Right.
So I got involved from a standpoint. That's how I started. And then I eventually went into a dojo or a school and started learning the techniques from a standpoint of a real teach. I don't want to discredit those people who I started with streetwise, but now you had obviously the rubber stamp from the people who had the certificates and it could promote you nationally and stuff of that nature. So I started competing officially in what was called judo when I was 12 years old. By the time I was 16 years old, 16 to 17 years old, I was a national champion. I was a second degree black belt. So I would even take those lessons back to my neighborhood and have the brothers, older brothers than me, who were street organizers, training them in the art of judo. By 1979, 1980, I had become one of the top people in my division, and we was even invited to the Olympic national, the Olympic trials, which was held in Colorado. Now, when you understand AAU sports and those Olympics, well, everybody, I don't care if you're taking first place in every event, the junior national, senior national, everyone still has to go to Colorado Springs, and you compete against the same people that you already beat. However, unfortunately for my situation, that year, 1980, this country boycotted the Olympics due to Russia and Afghanistan involvement. So I did not go participate in the Olympic trials, even though I was invited and was a favorite to win the trials and go on to represent in Russia. I took some other skills in which I also had played football in high school, became a very top recruited person and awarded a scholarship at a white university, which wouldn't play football there, and then had my cup of coffee in the NFL. But my survival skills comes from those brothers and sisters who I built relationships back in the streets of Chicago throughout football, and then my love of hunting and going out and experiencing wildlife and being able to eat off the land. So I think it's the conditioning that I had, and just similar to what you said, when you went into the military, there's a conditioning process that goes through. And that's one of the first things that happens in a martial arts school, happens in college football and pro football, that where you are conditioned and programmed to operate in a certain way. So it becomes second nature for you that once you come back out into the civilian type world, this is what, how you look at situations, this is how you deal with it, even though it may not be practical because civilians are dealing with things in a different way, but your training automatically takes you right back to how you were trained and how to deal with a certain situation.
Definitely. I know we had the opportunity of speaking with Dr. Victor Moore here on the platform and, you know, hearing his story of coming up before there was a school. You know, there wasn't a school, you know, they didn't have uniforms or anything like that. You see, so just, you know, the progression. And he also, you know, spoke about, you know, the mainstreamism now of the martial arts world. So, you know, he said everybody's just jumping around and yelling and, and jumping around. You know, it wasn't as serious. And I can definitely see that the one of the reasons identifiably among our people for the effeminization process is that lack of art of physical combat training. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That was a rites of passage. Six brothers and sisters, you know, coming up. You know, you had to fight for yours.
Yeah.
And in the house, and then you go outside. It's seven of us in our house, and that was the smallest number of people in a house in our neighborhood. You see what I'm saying? So it's seven of us. That's still not enough. So, you know, that those luxuries of just being a child and all of that, you know, that stuff goes out of the window. You're dealing in the realm of self-defense. Period.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Ready at all times, anywhere. You see what I'm saying?
So, yes.
And
yeah.
You're not going to run home and say, hey, you know, you tell your mother you got into a fight and you ran. You know, you
right.
tell your older brothers and then find out you was in a fight and you ran or whatever. And so it didn't matter if it was one person or 10 people. You know, we fighting.
Right.
You see what
I'm
saying?
I might
go home humped up. But I'm fighting.
Yep.
You're gonna remember it was me out there. You see, so
yes,
and I'm coming for you the next day. You see what I'm saying? So
see, one of the things that I didn't do, which I'm not gonna say, hey, I was the bravest person. I may have been just naive and not know what to do. But coming up in the city of in Chicago on that south side, with that group of, we lived on top of each other, what we call two flats. You had a family on the first floor, a family on the second floor, so that block was your block, and then we went on for every block that went on after that. But in my area, which was dominated by two gang factions or whatever, or street organizations, one called the BDs and one called the GDs, on where I grew up at, there was conflicts where people would run into each other. Now, I want to make sure that I put this out there, because when we talk about this gang life, and that's just for a lack of a better word that I can't find right now, is that everyone in Chicago is not in a gang. However, if you grew up in that city and still today, you are gang affiliated because it is divided by certain areas. So if my home is in an area that was once basically deemed a BD area, then I'm affiliated with that BD area. And if I should walk over into a different area that is affiliated, say, with a GD area, I may not have no dealings with that particular group in my neighborhood, but because I'm from that neighborhood, I'm perceived as a threat. So through my lifetime, I had to deal with those different situations and try to survive. And one of the things that I failed to do was to run. Now, I took on some beatings, dish some out, but I would never run. Now, that's not being smart, because I don't know why I didn't run, brother. It was just something to me about not running. So I would face whatever opposition that I had to face.
Right.
I'm still that way today. I'm not a runner. I'll stand on my square and face the opposition no matter what that situation is, be it physical, be it whatever the case may be. I'm a man who can stand up and say, all right, well, I'm going to take it head on. This is what happened, and let's talk about it. Let's do whatever we need to do, but I'm not going to run away from it.
Right.
And I want to give credit to the brothers and sisters, because even on September 26th, I have a brother who is an elder, a legend throughout this nation and definitely in Chicago, Brother Arthur Stringer, who was one of the founding members of the Disciple Nation, is going to come to the show, and we're going to have a discussion about what's going on, not only in Chicago, but throughout the nation with a lot of our things that are happening violence-wise and crime and the government behind a lot of the deaths and killings that you see in Chicago. And one thing I can tell you, what I learned from these brothers like Larry Hoover and like Jeff Ford and like Arthur Stringer and Don Kirk, is that when we talk about respect, you'll hear people talking about respect all the time. But one thing about respect is, if you never disrespect, that's the key. Never disrespect is the key to gaining respect. And that's what we have lost throughout the entire nation among our youth. And in order to survive, we have to understand that if we're going to move forward with our youth and our children and stop them from dying, is that key word of respect. Let's teach not to disrespect, because if I don't disrespect you, then there's no need for that brother to disrespect me. So that's one of the key lessons that I've learned growing up in those hostile environments, that as long as we came respectful, that we would be treated with respect. But the moment you step across the line and disrespect it, then that's when you had a lot of problems that you probably weren't expecting.
Yes, most definitely. And that's something that I learned, you know, the hard way.
Yes, sir.
And it wasn't until I got into, you know, martial arts, having an understanding of what that truly means, I learned after my, you know, transition. Everybody starts maybe in karate or taekwondo or whatever's available, you know, in your, you know, general locale. I got an opportunity to study Aikido and, learn Aikido.
Great art. That is great. Mm-hmm.
You know, the philosophy around Aikido, you know, everybody read The Art of War. I read The Art of War, mm-hmm. but I also read The Art of Peace. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the founding philosophies surrounding Aikido. It says when a person attacks, they violate the natural order of the universe.
Mm.
So it's your duty as a person that is a part of the universe to bring that back into view. So, you know, if a person attacks, you can divert the attack. Some levels that works for some people, you know. So you can just, you know, block it, or you can sidestep it. You can step into it, you know. You can embrace it. And other people, you may have to break their arm. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever gets them
mm-hmm.
into a position where they're back in harmony with the universe. You see what I'm saying? So, you know,
sure.
Some people you can use, and, you know, we just start, you know, speaking about the appropriate levels or escalation of force measures, you know, needed to subdue
mm-hmm.
or eliminate a threat. So, you know, it's no longer
right.
a threat, you see.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some people, it works. We just, you know, they can just be moved to the side, and it's okay. They're good. You know, they're no longer, you know, thinking about attacking. And other people, you might have to break their arm. You might have to break their leg. You might, in ultimate case, up to deadly force, you see. So, but you're prepared to do that, you know, based off of that type of aesthetic, and you don't find any threat in doing what you need to do, you know. These are
mm-hmm.
martial arts, you know. So
mm-hmm.
these, and I know, like, with that, you know, there's stages that goes, you know, you learn something, you want to try it out. You see what I'm saying? But
yeah.
now you realize the, you know, the weighted responsibility that comes along with knowing what you know. You know, so now you're not seeking trouble. You're not seeking out violence, but you're prepared for whatever violence comes to you in the
right.
best manner. So.
Yes, sir. Yeah. See, martial arts ends up being, it's a way of life. And that's one of the things. It's not just all kicking or chopping bricks and doing this, these things. I remember a scene that from Enter the Dragon where he hits the board and he says, look, you know what, boards don't hit back. One of the favorite all lines of a martial artist who's looking at this. However, when you, my experience was that judo is called the gentle way. And it's basically a science of using your opponent's weight against themselves. Okay, it is not one where it attacks. It is more of a defensive fighting style. Now,
right.
People will ask the question, well, man, what's the best martial arts to take? Karate, Kung Fu, Taekwondo. I don't really, doesn't matter to me which one you take. You can take one of them as long as you understand that you need to learn how to be violent if you ever have to use whatever it is you need to use. And I learned that experience of the violence from fighting in tournaments and then training with different nationalities. Because seeing judo is an international sport, so we would fight the Japanese, we would fight the Russians, we would fight the Koreans. And one of the things that I did learn was definitely from the Japanese and one thing is from the Russians. Japanese teaching this martial arts judo because they claim that they are the inventors of the martial arts of judo. But we know through the teachings of Dr. Crazy that started in ancient Africa. They were doing martial arts before Japan knew what a belt, black belt stuff was. But that's another story for another time. But for the sake of this discussion, let's say that Japan takes this claim for this art of judo. So they practice every throw and every move, the entire practice. So we spend a lot of time doing things that we are never going to, that I would never use. Whereas the Russians practice on their strengths. They don't practice on their weakness. They do what they do well and forget about the weakness. So I combine those two teachings and develop something of my own where all these hundreds and different katas and moves and judos and all these things, I learned one offensive attack and one counterattack. Those two moves took me to the nationals in the height of my judo career. So when people ask me the question, well, what martial arts should I take? Take whichever one you feel comfortable with and try to narrow your scope down to doing two things very well. Once you're able to do two things very well and you have confidence in what you do, then you will apply it as necessary. And it's the same thing, brother, as in sports. When we look at a football, when you look at football this Sunday, whoever's watching football teams do what they do well. You know, whatever play works for them, and people look and say, man, why do they keep running the same play? Well, they run that same play because they're doing it well, and they would rather gain 2 or 3 yards running that play versus taking a risk on running another play that the audience or the fans may see, but they're going to keep attacking. And that's the thing about this sport in football, you keep attacking the weakness. You keep attacking. What you'll see come Sunday, and I didn't want to take us all into a whole sports realm, but this has to do with strategy and it has to do with self-defense. You'll see a situation where you'll, in the first week of the NFL season, where if you get beat in that first game, you're going to get tested each and every week until you can prove that you can stop that play. So this is why you'll see that same cornerback getting burnt. If he gets burnt in the first game, man, you better believe every team now is going to watch that. And it's something that you said about studying the opposition when you were in Iraq, I believe, or Afghanistan. I forget which one you said, on how they study. Well, in the NFL, we study game film. If you play basketball, football, you study game film. And we study 3 weeks out. So we're looking at the opponent's last three games. We're watching what they do. In survival mode, with straight black survival, we have to study our opponent in the same way. We have to study. We know what they're capable of. We know what they're doing. We know the programs that they're putting in place for our destruction. Now we have to counterattack that and be smart about it. We got to stop running these trick plays. And here, I'll make another football analogy for those who may watch sports. Yeah, it looks good when a team runs a reverse play or they run the Statue of Liberty or they run the flea flicker. But at some particular point, they got to play football. You see, you can't just run that same play the entire game. So when we translate this over into strategy, they cannot continue to trick us and continue to do the same things that they've done through history to our demise. We have to get smarter and understand at some particular point, we're going to have to sit down here and face this enemy head on and take on the issues at hand.
And adapt and overcome, most definitely.
Yes, sir.
You know?
Yes, sir.
I agree. When I was watching sports, I was a 49er fan. You know,
okay.
And the whole situation with Colin Kaepernick, before all of this stuff, and they were like, hey, Colin Kaepernick, blah blah blah. Everybody was singing his praises. I said, let me tell you one thing about an adaptable type of position. I said he was good. Because nobody expected a quarterback to be able to be on the run like that. And I could see that propensity between him and Russell Wilson as the new type of quarterback, not just the pocket passer, to be able to throw on a run and create plays. But all of the defense, I said every single defense in the NFL, whether they play Colin Kaepernick or not, is watching that film. So the way he was able to run that Cinderella season all the way to the Super Bowl, that's one thing. I said, that will never happen again. You understand what I'm saying? Every defensive player, whether they in college or whoever, they watching this quarterback and say, hey, we got his number. You see what I'm saying? So all of the defenses are coming, and they all adapted. It's like, hey, look. We ready to get you. You're not about to embarrass us. You see what I'm saying? Like you might have got that off for a season. You see what I'm saying? You might win the battle, but you're gonna lose the war. You see, because everybody's adaptable, and that fighting that adaptable type of enemy, caused and inflicted a lot of casualties. Amongst our enemy, like we see our enemy as all powerful, this all powerful, overwhelming system, but they're not in Vietnam. They're not in Somalia for the same reasons. Whatever you win, you don't go anywhere. You see what I'm saying? So if you look at America, wherever America won, they never left. They're not in Somalia. They're not in Vietnam. Right. You understand what I'm saying? They did not win there. They got chased out of both of those places. They're not in Iraq, but they're in Iraq. You understand what I'm saying? So I've seen bodies hanging from bridges. Where did they learn that? With nooses around their neck. You understand? So that was the penalty for working with the enemy. You see what I'm saying? If they found out in Iraq you was working with the enemy, they got you. And if they got some American soldiers, they brutalized them in the worst kind of manner, and they hung up some trees. When I say American soldiers, you know who I'm talking about. You see what I'm saying? Our enemy, So in Afghanistan, if they found out that, you was working with the U.S., they killed your entire family.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I mean, we're the only people who, I'm talking about collectively as a black race, are awarded by our own people that work with the enemy. So we can have our people start a movement, and then they go work with the enemy. Turn your leaders in, dismantle your whole organization, and then we turn around and give them a reward for it or name an award after them. So that's something that obviously we have to be understanding of within these organizations that we're building, that we have to vet ourselves, and there has to be some accountability among ourselves, and then there has to be a penalty for those traitors among our race. So till we get to that point, we're going to always be faced with our race being one that has to fight within itself before it can move forward.
Well, the streets got a penalty. We all know those penalties growing up. You see what I'm saying? Those things never change. Those things never change.
Yeah.
Now, along with the accountability and penalty, we have to build a coalition that has loyalty to their race. You see what I'm saying? Like there's no motivation currently other than love, and that love is subjective, to be black. You see what I'm saying? Like we're comparing ourselves to nations, and we're a nationless people. We're just like, hey, look at what these people are doing, and look at what these people are doing. You see what I'm saying? African cosmology doesn't operate like that. our family is everything as African people. So when we look in our family dynamic, we can find every single type of thing that exists external to the family. If you have more than one child, you got two opposing political organizations vying for power within the household. You see what I'm saying? So if you got an A student and a B student, you're not respecting the B student or the A student. You're just using one against another. How come you're not an A student? Like, you're just a B student. You understand what I'm saying? Now you cause a conflict between two children. You got an A student and a B student. You see? So the A student is good this way. Let's find out what the B student is good at, and let's cross train. You understand what I'm saying? So one can help the other one. You see? So, and this is just within our household. You see what I'm saying? Recognizing the strengths and working on the weaknesses, not shaming and not comparing between the two children. You see what I'm saying? Recognizing that you do this well, boom, and you do this well. So now one respects the other one for their contributions and what they're able to bring. And this is the overall success of the family, with everybody doing that SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, oppositions, and threats. You see what I'm saying? And looking at that and really breaking that down, as opposed to this individuality of this Eurocentric mind. You know, it's contrary to the African model. So we don't have a rites of passage type of system where which you go from boyhood into manhood, and you're prepared to be a warrior. You see, you're prepared to be whatever the need is for the communal type of situation. But all of this begins within the family dynamic. It begins and ends in the family dynamic. So we got brothers and sisters that are nationless and homeless, even if they live someplace. You see what I'm saying? Homeless. You see, because that deals with that ability to be in a place where you are in control of food, clothing, and shelter. You see what I'm saying? Because the man can come kick you out of your spot. So you're not in control. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You're not in control
right.
of your own destiny when thugs can come to your house and remove you from there. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
So, you know, we're homeless, we're nationless. You see what I'm saying? So now, like, when we start looking at straight black survival, when we start looking at straight black pride, that begins as a catalyst inside of the individual to become a part of the family, to reconnect with the family, to become reaware of who you are and who we are as African people within our family dynamic. And that's the place where we are constantly blitzed attack from all areas, you know, and through all levels of people activity, you know, within our family dynamic. Because they know as long as we are together as a family, there's nothing that they can inflict upon us that will break that or sever that chain. So if we're looking for local unity, national unity, international unity, global unity, it all begins and ends within our family dynamic, you know? So if our family values are not valued, we don't have a family of values, of principle, you know, all of these things. So none of these other things can be introduced until we really examine and get into the heart of the family. And, you know, straight black pride is really dealing with the family. It's a family environment. You see what I'm saying? So that is really the catalyst of how we move forward, you know, through our family, you know, and, you know, through our children, recognizing those talents, those gifts, you know, what they're here to do, you know, and all of these other things that are associated with African life, you know. So it's definitely something that is, you know, very key in regards to, you know, what we're dealing with. And, you know, a part of it, and one of the greatest contributions that we had in order to move forward, we had to be able to move forward with that sound type of movement. But also when we're dealing with accountability, we have to be able to have, you know, our people have the motive, means, and opportunity to be able to fight in defense, you know, against, you know, all oppositions and threats, whether internal or external.
Well said, man. Well said. Yes. You know, straight black pride has grown leaps and bounds. It's going to continue to grow. We just had our second annual convention at the Straight in Washington, D.C. And next year's is going to be bigger and bigger. So I encourage people to have it right around between August 18th, August 20th in that area. So next year, I don't know exactly where the location will be, but the Straight Black Pride Convention is one that you want to put on your horizon. You want to make sure that you put that on your calendar and try to get to that event. The thing really about Straight Black Pride, when you really look at it, and anybody, any female who's gone to a beauty shop, any male who's gone to a barber shop, or you've met someone for the first time, you're having a dialogue, a conversation with someone, for the most part, doing that dialogue or doing that conversation, the moment, everything's going fine until the moment you start, politics comes up. So you have somebody says, well, I'm an independent, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, then that changes your whole dynamics of your conversation that you were having with that brother or sister. The next thing that comes up when you're talking about being straight, black, and pride is this homosexual agenda. Once that starts to come up about LGBT movement and that, when you're talking to someone, that changes your dynamics, or the fact that you're not a proud black person. Well, straight, black, pride takes care of those up front, because if you're straight, you're black, and you're proud, and we don't talk about politics, we don't talk about your homosexual agenda, anything. If you're against those things, then you're straight, black, and proud. We can continue and talk all day long as long as we understand that foundation. So that is a great starting point of where you can build from. And any one of us can build just from off of those three typical bricks right there, and we just add on to it. So that's one of the main things that you have to understand about straight, black, pride. We don't care about political affiliation. Now, we're not concerned with who you voted for. We're concerned, or what religion you are. We're concerned with, are you straight, are you black, and are you proud? Everything else, we can work from there.
Definitely. I know we agreed upon a certain time, and I want to be respectful to that. But I also did want to take an opportunity to speak to you and get your thoughts on being nominated, for Black Power Award, your thoughts on the Black Power Awards as an institution, as a whole, and, hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, man.
Let me frame a question, I guess. Because, that's the same question you get, how did you feel, when you heard your name be called, for a Black Power Award, so I guess we can go that way.
Well, let me congratulate you too, brother, as well, and also the other brother, I believe, is Imhotep, with the work that we're doing through these internet waves when it comes to getting our message across to our audiences. The way that I was informed was actually by the brother who will be coming on your show tomorrow, who is Brother Tad Cromwell out of New York. Brother Tad, who does Straight Black Talk, on Thursday evenings on the Straight Black Pride Network, gave me a call and said, hey, brother, you have been nominated for an award on Best Internet Radio Show. And I was like, really? I was really shocked by the nomination, because I've only been doing this for, I think, coming up on 2 years right now that we started with me on the radio. I first started out with what was called Straight Black Sports, that moved to Straight Black News, and then now Straight Black Survival. But behind the scenes of that Straight Black News, which really was the nomination up under the E.J. Jones, there are a lot of people who were involved in that. So I definitely want to make sure my queen, Deborah Jones, who really pushed in order to help me be able to do those shows, and also the team that was involved, because we had people like David Pendleton, our brother Al Epps, our sister Katasha Jones, and our brother, David Jakata. So there's a few people out there who really helped make that show what it is. But again, I was surprised, especially with the amount of time that we've been doing the show. And last year, I went and was a presenter at the Black Power Awards, and a big salute to Brother DJ, who was the executive producer of the Black Power Awards show. So it was a great event. It was sold out. I'm sure it's going to be sold out again, because they moved the venue to a bigger place. And I know the first year, last year, people were waiting out, so they couldn't even get into the show. They had an overflow room where you can watch it on screen. But luckily enough, I was a presenter. I was able to actually participate and give it out one of the awards. So, man, I'm ecstatic. I'm happy, excited about going to the event and being nominated is great for what we're doing with Straight Black Pride, and for yourself, brother, and for the brother Imhotep, who also was a nominee as well.
Just say I was watching, you know, I was watching mm-hmm. brother DJ, you know, give out the nominations, and, you know, they were kind of hinting around, you know, kind of trying to build up the anticipation about, you know, getting to the nominees, and they got to the nominees, and it was like internet radio. I was like, oh, man, the first one out of the shoot, you know, internet radio. So they say, you know, Bobby EJ Jones. I'm like, yeah, you know, Straight Black Pride, baby, yeah, yeah. You know, so I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know. And then they said, you know, Michael Imhotep from African History Network. And I was like, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And then it was like a little pause, like a 2-second pause, 2 or 3 seconds, or maybe I made it up in my mind, you know. And he was like, I was going a lot, dude, and I was ready. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, it took me a second. I was like, what? They called my name? I was like, man. And then I realized, I was like, man, I'm in the category with some serious brothers. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I got to reach out and you know, congratulate my fellas, you know, War on the Horizon, African History Network, Know the Ledge Radio, are the reasons why I got into, you know, even having a radio show. You know, I'm from New Jersey. I grew up in the conscious community. You know, this virtual thing has really, you know, eroded the perception of our communities. You see what I'm saying? There's still community. We can come together. You know, my uncles have been ministers ever since I known them. You know, and they was mm-hmm. at the first Million Man March, you know, in 95. You know? So it was almost 2 million black men there. You know, nobody was asking
yes.
what your religion was. You see what I'm saying? So
right.
being black was more important. You see what I'm saying? The need for black men to come together was more important than any type of ideology that would normally try to separate us. You see what I'm saying? I went to the Million
yes,
Youth March in 98, and I joined the New Black Panther Party the next day. You see what I'm saying? Based off of the experiences that were had, you know, with the youth. So there wasn't a time where the youth, you know, could see past, regardless to what, you know, street tribe you may belong to or differences. We didn't have any differences on that day, you know. And everybody was packing also, too. You see what I'm saying? So it wasn't
right.
like it was a
right.
situation where, which, you know, we had, you know, some type of situation with the NYPD on that day, you know. So it
mm-hmm.
it really forged us in that manner. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, us moving out and then, you know, my sojourn in the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, along with other different organizations, it shaped my mind frame in regards to speaking the language of the people. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, regardless to political ideology, regardless to religious affiliation, when you're involved with an organization and a cause that's greater than that all, you can speak all the languages of the people in the room. You can speak to them in a manner that's befitting, and at the end, you know, the goal is liberation. The goal is sovereignty. So we can have a discussion, you know, centered around sovereignty, because that's greater than it all, you know. So whether you're in the church, whether you're in the mosque, wherever, you see what I'm saying? If you're, I need you to take this to wherever you are and whatever you're involved in, that this is the goal for us as a collective. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, so that's really akin to where in my heart and in my spirit, you know, the sentiments and the goal and the aim of Straight Black Pride movement. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm like, if I could align myself with anybody that's out there, you know, currently, it would have to be Straight Black Pride. You see, because, you know, we went through the organizational woes and different things, and you understand what I'm saying? You get into, you know, the politics of organizational structures and things like that. You know, you go to your job, you go through the politics of your job, and, you know, you might be in a religious institution and you're dealing with the politics of the religious institution. You should be able to come somewhere and just be who you are. You see what I'm saying? Straight, black, and proud. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the only requirement. You see
right.
what I'm saying? And, you know, there's no misguided loyalties in there. There's no underlining
you know, motives or anything like that other than being straight black and proud and wanting a better future and liberation for our people. You know, period. So I'm like, you know, this is a beautiful opportunity and, you know, always giving opportunity for anybody who's in the straight black pride movement or affiliated or a supporter or an advocate, you see. So I'm definitely honored to be able to be in the category of representation with, you know, brothers with resumes that, you know, marvel, you know, and exemplify that type of, you know, straight black men that we need to see. You see what I'm saying? And, you know, hardworking, dedicated family, you know, examples, these examples where we got away from in the virtual conscious community. It's not family oriented. You know, you got people, you know, bashing one another to make a dollar. You see what I'm saying? So the dollar is more important than respecting someone's way of life or ideology. Nah, you know, so, you know, it has to come back into view. There has to be, you know, they say, just be the clean glass. No, you take that dirty glass and you clean it out. You see what I'm saying? Why would you present something else? If this is a dirty glass, it's only dirty until you clean it. Then you, so the clean glass and the dirty glass is one and the same. You see? So, and if that glass can no longer be clean, you break it and you get another one.
Man, Jordan, man. And yeah, you did a great job. I mean, for you to, I mean, basically, you contacted me and to invite me on this program, man, that, I salute you for that, man, because I don't think anybody else would have been thinking in the nature in which you were to say, look, let's have this brother come on. And not only are we up against the same award, but it is out of the respect and out of love for what we do for the people that we can have a conversation together on your show to talk about issues about what's the problem with what's going on with our people. But just to do that with somebody, you know, to us to do that, man, I've got to salute you. That's a big on your part. So thank you for definitely allowing me to come here and speak with you. And tomorrow, man, you got Brother Tag coming in. I'm just glad I went before him because that brother brings the fire. So
yeah, definitely.
I couldn't follow up behind Brother Tag. You know, Brother Tag coming out of New York, very knowledgeable. Knows, has his feet on, his boots on the ground. He works in the community every day. So he is a brother that's been through his trials and tribulations as well, just like any one of us. But he's been out there and is well known throughout New York as a brother that has no problem not only putting his boots on the ground, but putting his hands up too. So
that's right.
I'm looking forward to listening to Brother Tag tomorrow on the show. But man, again, a lot of credit goes to you for inviting and having the Straight Black Pride movement on this entire week on your program and on your platform.
It's definitely a credit. You know, we did it last year and had the opportunity to have, you know, Brother Tag on and Brother Bomani from United Front and also, you know, General Irritated Genie on Brother Jake Black from United Front. So we had a packed weekend on, you know, and it was a beautiful opportunity to be able to, you know, lay down those goals, aims, and objectives and, you know, give attention to, you know, War on the Horizon and, you know, the Straight Black Pride movement. You see what I'm saying? So to be a differentiator, you know, it's definitely, you know, to know for anybody who tunes into this broadcast, you know, we're on 7 days a week. I often joke and say we're on 8 days a week. Like, we start our week with Africa and we end with Africa and everything in between is Africa. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, we're on. And anyone who knows, you know, tunes into this broadcast knows that we are one of the strongest advocates, you know, for straight black life. You know, there's no other way. You know, there is no other way.
Yeah.
You know, we say race first. I say race only. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
Race only.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? Like, so if we would have a first, you know, we have a contention of people because we deal in universal principles. We would have a contention of people that would have a race second or a race third, whomever they put in their ranking systems now. But if we're race only, there's no room for anything else. You see what I'm saying? So we got a race only mentality. You know, we can start race first and, you know, build into that goal of being race only. You see what I'm saying? That's intelligence, you know. That's intelligence. Why would you think that it would be okay to, you know, include anybody else? They're not including you in the, you know, in their party, but we want to, you know, bring everybody to the party and have them sit around and see what we have going on and this and this and that. You see what I'm saying? That's a good nature of our people, but that's also an opportunity for, you know, snakes of the grafted type to come amongst and be poisonous and be venomous. You see what I'm saying? And we've been dealing with that after effects of that mental grafting process, you know, for quite some time during our occupation here in the Hells and Smells in North America. So definitely want to be able to, you know, always have a renewed sense of love and power and celebration. You see what I'm saying? This is why this is a Straight Black Pride celebration weekend. You see, so we're celebrating Straight Black Pride, and we're celebrating, you know, Baba Kefaru getting a nomination for a Black Power Award, and, you know, what that looks like for our people. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, going forward.
Right.
You know, and what we're doing here, you know, is, you know, further cementing that relationship, saying, hey, you know, this is bigger than, you know, what it appears to be. You know, we're not in opposition. You know, definitely. You know, we're in cooperation. You know, not opposition. You see what I'm saying? We oppose those who seek to do us harm from the outside. So definitely, it's an honor and privilege to have had you on, and I hope that, you know, we could get some jewels from you. And, you know, because we do that straight. We do that Black Survival Show. You know, every Wednesday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, you know, anytime you're welcome to pop in for a few minutes and drop some jewels on us and roll
out.
Man,
love to. Yeah, definitely, man. I'll keep that updated and make sure I call in. I know you say you do it every Wednesday, so right. We'll make sure that we give some of that. And, you know, one of the things is that any one of those guests who I will appear on Straight Black Survival, man, you need them, just let me know. If you don't know them, we'll make sure that you have the information to contact them, because there's no competition among what we do. Even though that people may look at and say, well, obviously you got to go out and vote for one of the three of us. We all win. No matter who takes the home, the trophy or the award, we all win because we all acknowledge each other. We all understand that there's work that needs to be done. It's going to have to continue to be done. When we do the Straight Black Survival, obviously it is geared toward us surviving. And those guests who come on, many of them have experiences where they can lead or lend to us, but we can share it with that. So we definitely want to share it on your program, on your Wednesdays when you do your survival talks to your audience. So, man, the feeling is mutual. Whatever I have, man, you have access to.
Definitely. So we're going into final thoughts. Whatever you want to leave with our listening audience, and also your contact information, when again the show times, and everything of the sort that you want to put out to the people. And also anything
okay.
that you have coming up as far as, you know, guests coming on, things like that.
Yeah, no problem. Well, every Tuesday we do Straight Black Survival. It is a blog talk radio show. We have a Facebook page called Straight Black Survival, and you can tune into the show every Tuesday. We have a ton of guests who come with a lot of expertise on there, even per people who have gone through certain situations and express how they survived a certain situation. This coming Tuesday, we have a brother, Oliver Kingdom, who is ex-military special ops person who has served in Iraq. And he's going to come to the show that Tuesday, I believe that's the 16th, which will be coming up. So we're going to gain a lot of information from him. But a very important show that we're going to do, brother, is going to be held September 26th. And September 26th, again, I stated earlier in the show, a brother by the name of Arthur Stringer. He's known primarily as Advisor Bo. He is one of the founders of the Disciples. He is a original member of what is still called the Black Disciple Nation out of Chicago. So I think all of us will be able to learn something from that show. I know the brother, and was one of the brothers that when I was growing up in Chicago, his reputation preceded him. So I'm looking forward to having that dialogue with him now on a public format versus me and him talking privately. This will be the first time that he and I will have a conversation where people will be able to call in and ask any question that they want to talk to Advisor Bo about when it comes to the street organization and to his own linkage to that organization and what it's about. So I look forward to that one. Again, people can reach us on Straight Black Survival on our Facebook page. And for those people who follow Straight Black News, you still have Straight Black News, which is a page as well on Facebook. Our sister Katasha Jones, who writes for that page, Brother Al Epps and Brother Jakata. And you'll be hearing from them at some point in the future, more on the radio at some point too, once we are able to find that format in which they'll be able to work within. But they've just been on assignment. So I know a lot of people understand that Straight Black News, and now you're doing Straight Black Survival. But again, it's a lane that I feel comfortable in. It's something where my passion and heart is in as far as Straight Black Survival. And that's the lane that I'm riding in. And until something else, which would be Straight Black and something, but until now, it's Straight Black Survival for me each and every day. And again, brother, I want to thank you for inviting me, having me out to talk with your audience today and sharing your time with me. And people, support this program, support all these internet programs, because we fund these programs ourselves. This is not something that we get sponsorship from. There is no euro sitting out here dictating or making our programs. This is the work that we do. We don't get paid for it. This is something that we have a passion for and we think is needed. And it's programs like this that we have to keep alive and keep doing. And it's real news. This is the type of things that we have to focus on and stay committed to. So again, brother, I want to thank you for having me out. And I just say, Abibi Fahoudier to you, man, and Straight Black Pride.
Abibi Fahoudier, Straight Black Pride. All right, family, I'm going to wrap it up again. Shout out, this is day one of the celebration of Straight Black Pride weekend, and also the birthday of one of our honorable ancestors, B.B. King. So we're going to ride out with some B.B. King. Don't forget to check out Brother Tad Cromwell. Uncle Tad will be in the building tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So B.B. Foodier, Straight Black Pride, Straight Black Love, Straight Black Power.
Front.
Brooklyn.
Shout out to Lone Star RPGs. Sahel RPGs.
United Front.
I want to thank y'all, man.
University Ave.
All the support. All the love through the years.
End of the road.
Yeah. It's the moment of revenge.
All my people.
Last stop on this train.
May your spirit live on forever.
Train to liberation.
Back to the O.
Let's go.
Queen Jotty Green.
Jay Black. Every day to Genie. What up, Brad Wild? Yeah.
Real.
Glorious Asiatic.
I love
Let's
y'all.
Go.
The God Truth.
Yeah.
I love
All right.
y'all, man. For real.
Let's go. Yeah.
I got so many things to say, but little time to say it. My grandmama told me that your life is what you make it. My ancestors told me human life is what is sacred. And love is something real, but not impossible to fake it. Most brothers base their life on trying to get a sister naked. Gain material possessions, manhood measured by their paper. Self-worth determined by a decimal and comma. Harder to develop honor growing up without a father. We need somebody armor, but you waiting on karma to fight this wicked beast while you puffing on a scar. You can smoke the ganja, but you can't escape your problems. Saw a brother on a train, eating chains like Obama. A penny for his thoughts, so I gave a man a dollar. And he dropped some knowledge on me, he had wisdom like a scholar. He told me keep cool, and never ever follow a fool. On the battlefield, cause he'll be the groom. To recite the fatal nuptials, and marry the tomb. Always be certain, never try to assume that every mess can be clean with the mop in the broom. Hit every cop in the room if you pop in your ooze. Mud stains on his clothing and his knuckles all swollen. It seemed like he was glowing after every word spoken. His voice sounded raspy from the cigarette smoking. I dropped some more change inside the cup that he was holding. I told him keep talking. He said let's walk. Then old Malcolm X takes speeches playing in his Walkman. It had a button missing and he said that it was given when his daughter came to visit him in prison on Christmas. Some people kept their distance from the stench that he emitted, but they mingled with these dirty, filthy crackers. What's the difference? I asked him for his name, and his eyes showed pain like a child that's lost, searching for mommy in the rain. I'm the African they stole and beaten, treated like a slave. I'm the African rebelling, slicing crackers with the blade. The one thrown overboard to drown amidst the waves. The one who sacrificed my life so someone else was saved. The one you keep forgetting, whose history's unwritten. I made a contribution, just hoping I made a difference. People call me Mumia, some call me Matulu, some call me Sundiata. Can't get this wisdom on YouTube. The brother who was lynched, cause some house Negro snitched. Beaten in cash, braided body, thrown inside a ditch. I'm the one who made the commitment, while others ride the fence. The one, and he stopped short, leaving me in suspense. He pulled out the mirror, asked me, what do you see? He said, brother, I am we, you a reflection of me. That's real.
Lumumba's revenge.